claymcmathcomedy.com for all my dates, deets and links, podcast merch. Make sure you go and share the show. You're automatically in the draw every time you share to win some free Welcome to the Potty merch. And we track it, so you're never going to win the same merch twice. Think about that. claymcmathcomedy.com. We've got so many shows coming up for Cold Blooded Comedy. They're all listed on the website, claymcmathcomedy.com. Don't miss out. ClayMcMathComedy.com.
Oh my god, so big and strong.
Bung Bung Coffee, big, strong flavor. Competition? I don't think so. BungBungCoffee.com, get yours.
Welcome to the party, best show on the internet, ask anybody. You know it's easy money, sit back, relax, get your headphones everybody. Welcome to the party, blackout in the booth, every episode's a party. We go hard like Ricky Bobby, tell a friend to tell a friend, this is Welcome to the Party.
Welcome to the party, bung bung! It's your man Claytron, aka the Big Boss Man, aka the Clumsy Jeweler, cause I'm always dropping gems, aka the Milkman. Because I always deliver, aka the PhD of podcasting, the Magnum PI of podcasting, the Captain, the Ric Flair of podcasting. Woo! And I'm here today with Steve Coombe, aka Calvin Fresh, aka the Sophie Monk of podcasting, because boy, can this guy host.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Welcome to Melbourne, man.
Yeah, we're in your house. We're here at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival and doing some gigs. It's been a fun week.
Mm.
Yeah.
You've been out and about on the road the last couple of nights?
Yeah, man. It's been good doing some gigs. The All Aces Comedy Showcase and the after party with Chris Franklin. So that's been a blast.
Yeah. It's been super interesting watching it happen. Mm. What's your main takeaway, the difference between the Adelaide scene and the Melbourne scene?
Well, it's a festival, so I can't really talk on the scene, but in terms of just the level of buzz in the city, like it feels... Like, Adelaide starts to buzz during Fringe, but it still shuts down early.
Right.
But Melbourne, it feels like almost like New York, obviously, like, scaled down, but it's awake, it's alive, it's buzzing, it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting seeing, like, the numbers on some of the comedy shows, like, here versus some of the shows in Adelaide. I think it would be more fun on the comic side of things having, you know, more full rooms to play to and having less burden of that.
Definitely less stress before a show, thinking like, God, I hope people show up tonight. Like, I hadn't really thought that at all this week, but in Adelaide, when someone offers you a gig, it's like, okay, we'll see what happens here. But none of that sort of stress over here so far.
Which is, you know, I think that's half the battle, right? Like, once the room's filled, it is a few more targets to aim at, right?
Yeah, exactly. No. We had a wedding on the weekend. We went to a friend's wedding, and I'm out of commission basically since then because I got dancer's knee because I was cutting up rugs like a carpet layer.
Yeah. I actually haven't seen you move that well in a really long time. To be honest, I kind of was worried about you the next day if you were going to be able to get up out of bed.
Yeah, well, I made it, but it hurt.
Yeah. Those knees don't do what they used to, do they?
Nah. No. I got asked last night at a gig. Twice at both gigs last night, there was some comics that are basketball fans, and they were both just like, "Oh, do you hoop? Do you like we're doing a run on Saturday morning?" I was like, "No."
What a like sub niche of a niche. You've got like a comedian, and then you've also got comedians who hoop together. It just seems like you're in your people.
Yeah. Comedians who hoop together, stay together.
Right. Yeah.
Lay together.
Yeah. Right. So, we did watch a pretty interesting movie together the other night as well.
We did. Boardman, hit the theme.
Comedy, action, horror. Will this movie win an Oscar? Set design, directing, acting like Tinger costumes. This segment is Clay's Reviews.
Yes, so we watched The Iron Claw.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to give the synopsis of the movie? Or
basically, it's a true story about this family, the Van Erich family, who just the amount of tragedy in this family's life. They were like a legendary wrestling family,
mm-hmm.
In the WCW or WCCW, World Class Championship Wrestling. And so much tragedy in this family that they actually believed their last name was cursed.
Mm.
And
which I'm starting to believe is true. Like, I think it is true. Like, I think
if a curse is true, if a curse is a thing, they had one.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's 100% true in my books. I don't think I didn't do any like research into like the scene or the family or anything beforehand, so I was pretty green. Mm. And you would like define that movie of like, what does a cursed family look like? I feel like that would be like the Von Erich family would be the blueprint for that.
If I wrote a story about a cursed family, it wouldn't have been as grim as this true story.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's that? Reality is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
And I think it's like the fact of the matter as well is the things in the movie actually don't give you all of the context either. It's like they went, no one will believe us if we go all the way. Let's go 85-90%. Because like when you read the story after that, you find out that there's actually another brother that doesn't even feature in the movie.
Yeah, so the Von Erich family, it was the two parents plus, in the movie, five brothers.
Yeah.
In real life, there's six brothers. They didn't even mention one because it was just like, no, yeah, like you said, no one's going to believe this. This is going to be ultra depressing.
Well, yeah, I mean, spoiler alert, but there is only one of them, one of the six brothers, is still alive.
Yeah.
And that's been the way since 1993.
Yeah. And they were basically dying off every 2 years, tragically. Like,
and then,
three in real life. The brother that wasn't mentioned in the movie was a suicide as well.
Yeah.
One questionable in the movie. They kind of said it was a burst intestine.
Yeah.
In real life, they think it's possible it could have been a drug overdose.
Yeah. I think it was Hulk Hogan's book or someone's book. They referenced that the guy who was rooming with him potentially flushed the stash of drugs down the toilet before the authorities got there. Like, that seems to be like the inside scoop.
Yeah, okay.
So drug overdose / intestine burst. I mean, they both sound awful, really.
Yeah, and then there was a child, the oldest brother, who died at the youngest age.
6 years old.
6 years old, died.
He'd been electrocuted via like some sort of fence or some sort of like farming contraption, and he got stunned and fell forward into snow and drowned. Like, the amount of like Final Destination that you would attribute to that family with that in itself is just ridiculous. But he was the oldest son, so like I think what the bottom three or four kids didn't even meet him.
Yeah And I don't want to like explain you know, the details of every death, but there's just one thing that that they didn't go into in the movie that I had previously sort of, I think it was a podcast from where Ric Flair was on a podcast and he talked about this family, and the Kerry Von Erich had a motorcycle accident, ended up having an amputated foot, and in the movie they don't really go into the depth of like he continued wrestling, which they do show, but they didn't explain that. I don't believe that the public knew that he had no foot.
No.
And I think he was pumping himself full of painkillers.
Yeah.
And eventually became addicted before, you know, taking his own life. Like, it's just one single incidents like this in a family would be like the most tragic thing you could ever heard of, and it happened to five children. Yeah. Five sons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting as well, because it's like they frame the whole movie through the eyes of Zac Efron's character, who's the default oldest.
Yeah.
Kevin, he's like the central character, although the rest of them all feature pretty heavily, but it's like him and the dad, and like the dynamic is like the dad has essentially never been given a fair go in his wrestling career. So then his whole strategy became to just create sons that could fulfill his prophecy.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty early in the movie where he establishes that he's got a favorite order of sons and that the rankings change and things, and you get this piece of like, oh, these guys, like, they may have a relatively miserable upbringing because of a father like that and a mum that didn't really seem
to... Sort of just enables that style of parenting.
Yeah, you don't want to be stereotypical, but, maybe that, like, religious, down south kind of, like, vibe of the man calls the shots and the woman is just, I think they kind of make her out to be, making dinner and doing things and removing all of their hobbies and things like that. So, yeah. I'm not sure if that's, if they obviously make that to be a pretty heavy theme throughout the movie, and you don't really hear much about that in the story or like what you can read online, because it's, I guess there's so many other things that probably take precedent. But I mean, I think by the end of that movie, and I think you were the same, you felt like you just needed to like go on YouTube and look up puppy videos or something.
Yeah, it was draining. And I sort of referenced Manchester by the Sea when we were talking about it, because that movie was the same. There's just not a positive thing in there. It's like what's the goal here?
Yeah, but again, is that like, that's the art of storytelling, right? Like, I think we have this like fascination with like Marvel movies and things like that because they're predictable, and we can kind of like, we know that there's going to be an arc where the superhero, goes through shit and then eventually overcomes adversity and wins, and the good guy wins or whatever. And it's really interesting seeing movies where the good guy doesn't win, or potentially the movie isn't really an arc about redemption. It's just an arc about this actually happened and you're not going to believe it unless we portray it as a movie and kind of explain it that way.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And the fact that they removed the other brother from the movie,
he doesn't even feature.
Makes it even more unbelievable. The truth, like you said, the truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Now, we got to get into Zac Efron. Now, I don't want to take anything away from his his performance. He was magical. He was fantastic. He didn't get any Oscar buzz, unfortunately, but this was his best role to date. But whatever he's done to his fucking face, man, he's fucked himself up. He looks like a freak. He looks like, no offense, Andre the Giant.
He looks like, it doesn't seem like, if you look at when he was younger, he had kind of like a V-shaped face where like he had like a good jaw, but it would like come into a chin. Now his chin is literally a square. It's a brick.
Yeah.
And it's so wide from like his cheekbones down, and he's like, his chin just looks like, it looks like it's a prosthetic chin that he's wearing makeup.
I remember when it first happened, he claims that he tripped over in his kitchen or something. And
he's wearing socks and he tripped over and hit the edge of a marble thing. And almost his jaw was hanging off, or and he almost died. Or
yeah. Sorry, but no, you went and got plastic surgery, my guy. And we all can see it.
It's
horrific. He looks like, you know who else was super handsome and fucked themselves up? Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like. Mickey Rourke's face didn't, well, one, look like a leather purse, but it was also a different shape when he was younger. And it totally, his face changed shape and stopped moving. And that's what's going on with Efron.
Do you know what's funny? Is Mickey Rourke had his resurgence with the movie The Wrestler.
The Wrestler, yeah.
So a bit of poetry there.
Yeah, and they've both got leathery steroid faces in those films too.
It's crazy though, because like, you got used to it, like in the first few scenes, you're like, yeah, fuck, like Zach looks so different.
Mm.
And then by the end of the movie, you're just so used to it. Like, and because I guess that's a, probably a testament to how well he was in this. Like it's like, I've never seen him do a better role than this, to be honest. Like, I mean, not that I'm a big, you know,
Zac Efron fan. I'm not watching every movie that came out of him, but you know, it's not some Baywatch bullshit. It's not fucking High School Musical.
Ricky Stenicky, I did watch that.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. It's alright. It was shot in Melbourne, so.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, but he absolutely crushed it, man. And what's her name?
Lily James.
She was great. She's beautiful.
She's very, very attractive.
If she ever does go to see a doctor, make sure it's not Zac Efron's. Because she's stunning. I loved her in Pam and Tommy.
Baby Driver.
I fell back into my childhood obsession with Pam Anderson
after. Really?
That. Yeah.
Really?
She was unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen that. I need to check it out.
Yeah. It's really good. But no, she was great. There wasn't actually a bad performance in it.
No. I thought all the brothers did well. I mean, what's his name? Is it Jeremy Allen
White?
From The Bear and Shameless and things, he's really good too. Like he's just got perpetual sad eyes. I think that he plays the stressed out, sad, angry person just so well. I think it might be just his nature or whatever, but I think that's probably the other thing as well with Zach is like he looks like, as you said, Andre the Giant a little bit, like where he looks like a meathead.
Mm.
And then you kind of see the complete opposite in this, where he's like the older brother that navigates through like some serious empathy.
Yeah.
Like he's like the softy whilst being probably the strongest one there.
And just trying to protect everybody. There's some story points that I don't want to give away, but he was the one they would call. He was the one to try and, you know, protect and like, you know, he's the one that if they went away, they'd send a postcard to him, not the parents.
Mm.
Yeah, he was, and he didn't even consider himself the older brother because of the one that had died before him when they were children.
Yeah. I think they just nailed the storyline through him because, you know, when you factor it in, like all these other guys, like they had these tragic demises and it's really, really shocking. But no one in the bigger picture has had it worse than arguably the mum and dad and him.
Yeah. And he made it through.
He's the only surviving one.
And
literally buried his entire siblings.
Yeah. I'll stay away from the curse bit because there's like, I guess there's some complexities that are worth kind of watching for yourself. And it, like, this is definitely going to be recommended to see. So I don't want to, I'll do a spoiler for something I don't want to recommend, you know, but
this is
a banger. It was beautifully shot.
Oh yeah. Yep. I thought it was just like the way they take it from like, it's like the 70s and 80s. So it's like this time of like neon lights and like, you know, the graphics that used to be on, you know, like the Michael Jordan dunk contest where the graphic comes up on the TV and then it kind of like shakes a little bit and stuff because it's like, you know, they did it so well in that regard, like the editing, the acting, the cinematography. Like I really liked the movie, but it's just one of those movies that you don't really watch it more than once.
No, it's got no rewatchability whatsoever. It was so depressing and I just don't, like I said before, it's kind of like the story is so unbelievable. So you feel like it needs to be told, but like, was there another way to tell it? I don't know. It just was, it was pretty hard to sit through, I thought. And in the end, there's one point that I wasn't overly happy with. When Jeremy Allen White's character, Kerry, committed suicide. And then he goes, you know, to paradise or heaven or whatever you want to call it to see his other deceased brothers.
For context, he's the last
in the film.
I mean, he was the last one to die out of the brothers. So basically, there was only two of them left at that time. Yeah.
And he goes and he gets to see all his brothers and it's like, it almost, to me, was like, oh, the sweet release of death. He escapes the suffering through suicide. And it like kind of like, I don't know, it felt like a fucking advertisement for suicide. Like, oh, if you're struggling, just kill yourself and look how happy you can be. I fucking hated that scene so much.
Yeah.
I get the beauty in it, but I hated it.
I think that's the irony of those scenes is like, there's no way to do both. Like, you either go, he's in a better place now and do it like that, or you just don't mention it at all. But if you do try and capture that, it's almost like vindicating why someone made that action, which is obviously like not what you want
to champion. It's dangerous if someone's in a bad space and watches this, and you know, you probably don't like that's probably not the type of movie you aim to watch when you're feeling like that. I felt like that could put an idea in somebody's head. It just felt like a dangerous scene. I felt like the movie wouldn't have lost anything without that scene.
Yeah. I think the whole thing was, it's probably like, the way I look at it is the director put you through so much hell with, like, you know, basically forming attachments to these characters and then seeing them die. And then I feel like that was like the way of the director going like, you know, it's not as bad as what it could, like what it really is it was kind of like a skirt to like the audience more say to be like this has all been, you've just gone through all this shit and all this heartbreak, and then here you go, here's a little bit of a tearjerker where you go, oh, okay, well that's better than, you know, what it would have been without showing some sort of peace of mind.
I feel like then he doubled up, because the scene, the final scene with Zac Efron and his sons was kind of the same. They had the same meaning. Oh,
yeah, but like that scene killed me, man. Like, again, not to spoil it, but I just think those things, like when you actually take that in context of, like, you know, no spoilers, but someone basically being visibly upset in the environment of their kids.
Yeah,
it's pretty, like, you look at it, if you look at it from any other way, you're like, all you do is just have a pit in your stomach of going, that just, it just looks really painful. And I think that's another thing for Zach. Like, I think he just nailed this role. Like,
yeah, he crushed it.
Like, he did so well, where the whole time you forgot, one, that it was Zac Efron, probably more so because of his face, but he really did, like, he played this like kind of macho softy so well.
Yeah. What else?
What's the review out of, if we're doing out of 10?
It is out of 10, but first, snacks.
Okay, yes.
Went with, you know, classic movie snack, popcorn.
Yeah.
And had to go with some nerd ropes to symbolize the top the top rope of the wrestling ring.
Yeah. That's a clever touch. I think, you know, any other, like, type of rope associated with this movie would probably be not great.
Yep, that's true. Well, no one hung themselves, though.
Yeah, no.
Could have gone chocolate bullets, and that would have been probably a bit on the nose.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
I feel like I have chocolate bullets for every second movie, but this one, that would have probably... I actually didn't know ahead of time, so
I don't think you could plan for that. Like, I don't think anyone who's not familiar, like, I'm not familiar with wrestling. And the other thing as well is, like, that was one thing they did really well in the movie, is, like, everyone now looks at wrestling as, like, WWF or WWE or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's this big fake, like, show sport thing where it's all about, you know, challenging people and hero matches and things. They kind of show the other side. So they're, like, basically, like, the more entertaining you are, that's when you win. So
yeah, it's like, that's when you get written into being like a champion.
Yeah, you got to make the crowd. So like the acting and like the storyline and the showmanship is what makes you win if the crowd likes you, or contrary, if they hate you, whatever's going to bring in ratings. So it's really interesting that they have to go in there with like, I've got to put on a show, like I've got to be really interesting to watch. So that, yeah. And that kind of makes the most sense, especially like if you're looking at the WWF now, like yes, there's a bunch of characters that still... like we probably all know from when we were growing up, but like it's probably the same thing, right? Like The Rock and
Undertaker. Yeah, The Rock's back.
Triple H and
yeah
all those, like Hulk Hogan back in the day, like obviously he features in the film, as he, or his character does anyway.
That's what's the name, Nature Boy,
Ric Flair.
But overall I think I can only give it a 7. That, yeah, that one scene really, I didn't like it. I didn't think it needed to be in there. And just, you know, 2 hours of misery. Why?
Yeah. I think that's it, though. Like, I like movies like that. Like, not to say that I'm just, like, a emotional, depressed person, but I like sometimes seeing more reflections of real life. And I think that's what this movie was like, every character was pretty flawed, or they'd had like a really traumatic upbringing, or they were like, you know, they'd had been basically bullied by their parent or their dad, and their mum was complicit by not doing anything to help. And that was another theme through the movie, where you could kind of see where obviously the Zac Efron character became like the second figure of, you know, parent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's like, I would give it an 8.5. Like, I reckon 8.5 would be, that'd be the highest I'd give it. Like, I had to, like, the more I thought about it, the more I liked the movie. I just think it's one of those movies that is really good that you'll watch and then never watch again.
Yeah, no, it's not getting another run from me.
I mean, what's another movie that you reckon would be a one and done, but you, like, that's like a good movie that you would never watch again?
Oh, Green Mile.
Yeah.
Green Mile was just like, it's long. Length makes it hard. No Home Loans, no Diddy. But it's also just like depressing, so depressing. And yeah, John Coffey's such a sweet character, and the end for him is just, I can't stand it.
Yeah.
That'd be one. There's more. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Requiem for a Dream.
I haven't seen that.
Requiem for a Dream is a really great movie, but like just very sad, or just kind of messed up. I reckon there's a bunch of movies that would fit into that category.
Oh, absolutely. I just can't think of them off the top. And even ones that aren't like super sad, but like Interstellar blew my mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved that film. I don't really think I want to sit through it again, to be honest.
Yeah. But that's probably like the other part of it is like the magic of those movies is like, you don't know what's happening next. And once you know, it's like not as magical anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like not seeing it for the first time again. And there's a few movies that I really like that are like kind of like foreign language films, but there's one called The Hunt with Mads Mikkelsen.
Feeling tired? Fuck that. Perk up and level up with Bung Bung Coffee's delicious modern dark roast, your favorite brewer's favorite brew. bungbungcoffee.com.
One of those movies, it's so well done and such a great, like, entertaining movie by, like, entertaining you with frustration. Like, it makes you mad, the whole movie.
Like Good Time and...
yes,
and the Uncut other one, Gems. Uncut Chums?
Yeah. There would be two. I could watch Good Time again, I reckon.
I could watch both of them again.
Really?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Uncut Gems...
they're just not as depressing. Like,
Jesus.
Uncut Chums is pretty... like, the ending is pretty depressing, but
the whole movie, although, you know, shout out Kevin Garnett, he was amazing.
Yeah, he was. And Lakeith Stanfield. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was really good. I could watch that again, but maybe that's like once every 3 or 4 years, maybe. That's not not like an annual.
No, it doesn't hit the rewatchability of any of those.
No, it's not Wedding Crashers, which I watch, you know, once every 3 months.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall was up on mine.
Yeah. Anchorman, Superbad. Like,
what about any cult movies that you rewatch? Like, I love The Godfather Part 1 and Part 2, so I'll watch that at least once a year.
That frequent. Those ones, again, yeah, probably every 4 or 5 years, because those are long too.
Yeah.
But in saying that, Pulp Fiction, I watch probably once a year, and that's long.
That's a long movie, yeah. I've only ever seen that once.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's my favourite movie of all time.
I know.
I probably need to get a Pulp Fiction tap at some stage.
Is it going to be the dance?
No, it'd probably be Samuel L. Jackson portrait, I reckon.
Yeah.
Or I think the wallet. I think Rach hates portraits though, so maybe not. Yeah, maybe the. I don't know if I want a curse word tatted on me.
Really?
For the wallet, yeah.
Right. That's so like PG of you for someone that's not PG at all.
Yeah, I don't like. I'll say it. I don't know if I need it tatted on me.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So it's more so for like keeping up, like making sure that there's no what is it like evidence, like it's like it's like.
No, I don't think it's that. It's just.
Just in case you turn into a born again Christian. And,
yeah.
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 Because that would, yeah, that would probably be a hinder if you did.
And that's probably on the card. One more thing before we go. Do you have anything, like, obviously nothing can quite relate to the fucking heaviness, the just the sheer volume of tragedy in this film, but like anything that this film sort of like triggered for you in terms of like a personal circumstance?
Oh, that is a really loaded and great question. You just threw me into the spot. I reckon if I started anything, I'd probably end up crying and like laying on a couch right now, which probably would be the psych degree. I'd make you earn your money that way. But no, I think like, look, it's probably more of those things that you think about. Like, I'm obviously not a dad, but obviously want to be. So I think that would be something that I would take on board.
Like a parent, yeah. Like the parent, what not to do in terms of parenting. Yeah.
It was just like, I think there's just so many things in that where, but then again, you go, well, what was that guy's childhood like for him to be that way? Because it was probably worse than what
That's what we said when we watched it, like that the way what he treated his sons, like, and he clearly loved him, but the strictness and the forcefulness of his ideologies were like, I think I said, like, that's probably 15% of what he got.
Which is that, you know, I think there's one movie or documentary called Three Identical Strangers.
Yeah,
that one, it's kind of got a similar meaning to that, where you look at it and go like, oh well, like, you know, three suicides in a family of six sons, and one was an accidental death and one was an OD or whatever, who probably came from the stress of, you know, almost an escapism. So you're looking at probably four deaths out of six that are, you could almost attribute to the way it was raised.
You can call them avoidable.
Yeah.
They're unforced errors.
Yeah, yeah. What's the word for it in clangers? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Clangers. Yeah.
For me, I'd say, like, from the sporting perspective, especially Zac Efron and Jeremy Allen White's characters.
Yeah.
Jeremy Allen White sort of had the Olympics taken away from him through no fault of his own, no injury or anything. It was a beef between the US and Russia, and the US pulled out of the Olympics. So he was in the Olympic team. He didn't get to go, so he became a wrestler. He wasn't even a wrestler in the Olympics. He was a discus thrower. So like a sporting dream sort of being taken away. And then he didn't really have an identity, which is something that I've talked about ad nauseum on the potty, is like finding that identity once you leave something like sports, and you don't get trained on. I think the AFL does a really good job of it now. But I never, like, once, like, it took me 12 months, maybe 24 months to, like, let go of purpose? My anger and find a new purpose after I had retired from basketball.
And just to confirm, that purpose is...
comedy.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Zac Efron's character. So his dad sort of redirected, you're the man, actually you're not anymore, and he did it to two brothers. So this one is now, this one is since the other one's dead.
Yeah.
And he sort of like lost his position, in one, in the lineup of favorite sons, and two, in his role in his career, which is like in sports, like you can be a starter, then you're benched, then you're traded, then you're delisted or waived or whatever it is, and it's a hard thing to deal with. And he not only was dealing that from a business perspective, which his father owned, so that hurts, but also from a, within a family perspective, which like you said before, his father made it known that he had a ranking system happening, and he would have been feeling that he was at the bottom of the favorite list.
Yeah, and that's obviously ties into your own personal experiences with sports and stuff like that. And I think, yeah, that's one of those things that in movies you could see that as a common theme, or kind of that storytelling. It would be like pretty pronounced in so many different ways, of like almost the pressure that your parents have put on you. And once you have either lost that goal or lost that position or whatever, you just don't know what to do with yourself. And that's where it's like the hopelessness. There's the other side of it as well, is like the gold medal fever or syndrome or whatever, which was again, Jeremy Allen White's character.
Yeah.
You know, fulfills the prophecy in some way or whatever. Like, you know, it's very short term, but, immediately, puts himself back almost in a self-harming way. So like,
yeah,
there's so many different ways where you could look at it like that, which is super interesting. And again, I'd like, this was his I think it was his directorial debut. Like, I think his last name Serkin,
yeah,
Dean Serkin or Dan Serkin or something. But I really would be interested to see what he does next now because of that.
Because he'll get an opportunity, because he hit it out of the park in terms of direction, getting what he needed out of his cast. And like, I don't know who his director of photography was, but they
he's a Hungarian guy.
Those guys smashed it.
Yeah.
Forgettable score or soundtrack. I don't remember really anything going on there. Didn't really.
80s rock.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of 80s rock. I mean, they had the young kid playing it through the gym at one stage. The young, like,
it seemed like maybe he, I don't know if he, yeah, maybe he just played it or something. Maybe he chose their entrance music. They didn't really explain it, but it seemed like, because he started playing it at home.
Yeah.
And Alan White sort of finished his waist and turned around like,
yeah.
Like, this is cool. And then it was entrance into his belt title.
Yeah.
His title fight. Yeah. So, they didn't really go into that, but out of everything that was happening, it was a minor detail.
I think that was it. They really played on the dialogue. Like, they played on the absence of, I guess, those scores and stuff. Like, they had a lot of, I think the cinematography was pretty much always framing a position of like power or weakness, it felt like.
Yeah, and things like symbolism. The mother's dress, and they kind of just explained it away. But at the fourth funeral, she was like, "I can't wear it. Everyone's going to recognize it because it just keeps happening over and over." Like, I don't want to dwell on the fucking. It was so depressing, man. But 7.5, no, 7 for me, 8.5 for you.
Yeah. So what's that?
That's 7.
7.75.
Yeah. Before we go, I just want to say, if anyone out there is struggling, man, like, one, don't watch this, and two, talk to somebody, make a call, Lifeline, Beyond Blue, Black Dog, call somebody, get help, because it's hard for some people out there, and this movie definitely highlights that. But you know what it is, it's Welcome to the Party on everything. Follow, favorite, like, rate, review, 5 stars only. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the Welcome to the Party podcast. I love you guys. Don't forget to love yourselves. And as always, bung bung.